This is My Daddy Station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
This is the Voice of Freedom. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. This is the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, if you love dogs, you're going to love this broadcast and tomorrow's broadcast because it's all about dogs, protection dogs. At our conference on day 5, the entire morning was spent with Pete and Susie Sherlow, who are the owners of Apache Canine in the White Mountains. And what they taught us, and what they demonstrated to us with their dogs and my dog, Crusher, is that you may be a lot safer and a lot happier with a dog than with a pistol. And you may be able to deter an awful lot of attempts to rob you or rob your property or to harm you or your family with a dog than you ever could with any other means. Because just the presence of a well-trained protection dog will deter most criminals. They don't want to mess with that dog. I'm talking about big dogs. I'm talking about dogs that are well-trained, that don't run out and bite people. They won't bite unless they're told to bite, or unless there is an immediate threat to those that they have been trained to protect. So listen carefully. You might want to jot down this number. It's Peter Sherlaw's number. You can either talk to Peter or his wife, Susie. 520-521-5886. That's 520-521-5886. They're good people. If you have a dog question, they might be able to help you. If you're thinking about buying a family protection dog or a well-trained attack dog, you might want to talk to Peter or Susie Sherlaw first. It may save you a lot of heartache and grief. And if you listen to this broadcast, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Day 5, 9 a.m., Peter Sherlock. Conference 97.
I'm kind of new to a lot of this stuff, and I really want to thank you for the opportunity to participate in your convention. I've never been around anything quite like this before. What our specialty is that we believe in freedom. Okay? And the freedom that I'm concerned about and that I'm really worried about is not the philosophical context of freedom, although that's really important. My idea of freedom is to allow my wife to go to the grocery store without getting hassled by some thugs. That's freedom. I want freedom in my house, that my house is not going to be invaded by some dope-smoking thug, man, who thinks my TV is another pound of dope. You know, I just don't want that. You know, I want to be free to go where I want to go, to do what I want to do, not bother anybody, but at the same time, not be bothered. And we found that a lot of people, myself included, I'm not real comfortable carrying a gun every place I go. My wife is certainly not comfortable with that. I mean, it weighs about 2 pounds, and it's kind of cumbersome, and it makes the cops real nervous too. You know, so I don't want to look the girl, but I don't want to be bothered. So we found that protection dogs, family protection dogs, right, is a great alternative to firearms and personal violence. You know, the reason that bad guys are bad guys, right, is because they're lazy. I mean, if they weren't lazy, they would go get a good job, go get an education, get a job, they wouldn't have to steal. But you're lazy, right? So our idea, it seems to work out so far, is that if you present certain problems to a bad guy, out of his own human nature being lazy, man, he'll go someplace else. Which I can't stop him from doing that, but I'm darn sure interested in not having him deal with me, right? So I got a dog. Now, you want to deal with me on a violent level, you're going to have to deal with your dog. And that's real obvious. You know, even if the dog wasn't trained, if you're walking down the street with a German Shepherd or a Rottweiler or any large dog, and there's a thug out there looking to make a few bucks, he's probably going to go pick somebody else. He just don't want to be, you know, he's too lazy to deal with the dog, right? And we count on that. What we found is that a dog will deter 80% of any problems that you might normally have come your way. That leaves 20% of the people, man, that will deal with a dog. And the first 10% of those people, man, are people that just don't believe that you can train a dog to protect you. And they'll check him out, and you give the dog the command. The dog goes to the end of the leash, barks a couple times, and the bad guy runs down the street. You know, so, you know. The other 10%, man, are people under the influence of alcohol, which is a mind-altering drug, or narcotics, which also is a mind-altering drug. It really affects your judgment. And psychotics. And God knows, man, out here today, we got an awful lot of those people running around. And so what they'll do is they'll go up against the dog. After the dog is barking at them aggressively, they will continue on in the hopes that they can get past the dog, right? At that point, you need a dog that's not just going to nip at his leg and scoot back and forth, you know what I mean? Because that ain't going to stop this guy. But you need what we call, in the professional therapy, what we call a man stopper. If you got to put the dog on somebody, it's like shooting somebody. If I'm gonna shoot a bad guy, a BB gun ain't going to do me much good, right? I want a 357 hollow point that's going to knock him down and keep him down. And that's the way I want the dog to do. If I got to put the dog on somebody, I want a man stopper. I want to stop the aggression. I want to change this guy's mind. And if I can, I want to rehabilitate him immediately. You'll never do that kind of stuff again, right? You know, and these dogs do that. There are certain types of dogs that are more prone for this kind of training than others. There's Rottweilers, that are excellent dogs, Dobermans, German Shepherds. There's some exotic breeds like Boudiers, which are the big black curly looking things, man. They're just wonderful dogs, right? And now there's four or five breeds that are really good boxers you can use, right? But what you have to understand is that if a family is looking for a protection dog, even though he picks out a breed that will fit into his lifestyle, there's one, the National Irish is one in 10,000 dogs that will take to the training. It's a lot like being an airborne ranger in the service, you know? There's a lot of guys in the army. A few of them get to be airborne, and a few of them get to be airborne ranger, and a few of them get to be airborne ranger special forces qualified. And it's the same way with dogs. This dog, in that context, is an airborne ranger special forces qualified. He's sure of himself. One in 10,000 dogs with the right trainer and the right training methods will qualify. They're hard, hard, hard to get a hold of. So, since this is the 4th of July and it's your hour or two or whatever, however long this thing goes, what I figured that I would like to do is I would like to open up the floor to find out what it is that you folks would like to know about dogs in general that I know, maybe. And training dogs and stuff like that. I need to know what you guys want to know. So I feel that I could be helpful. So what we're going to do is we're going to open the floor and just find out what it is you guys really want to know about these things.
Can every trained dog stay for the family? Is a different family in that home? Could it be like the extension of my grandchildren that don't live with me? My daughter doesn't live with me?
If you have a protection dog, is it applicable to be used also for the extended family, grandmas, grandkids, and stuff like that? Absolutely. Absolutely. The dog works on commands. The dog does not make a judgment call. The dog does not decide when to attack and who to attack. You decide that. So if you walk down the street with your grandchildren, and a boogeyman jumps out of the bushes on you, right? You just tell the dog to attack. And he does. Your grandchildren are there, whatever. If you train your grandchildren, your mother-in-law, or your grandmother to handle this dog, what the commands are, when to use them, and stuff like that, the dog will work as well. This is my personal dog, Hope, and he will work for you. In fact, he will work for you against me. Because the dog works out of command. The dog loves me, right? But will just chew me to pieces if you tell him to. If you've got the leash and you know how to work this dog, the dog will bite me. It's the same as a gun, right? Gun doesn't care who pulls the trigger. The same way with the dog.
So the dog will be safe around here with the children.
Absolutely. That's part of the weeding out process. There are a lot of dogs that bark. There's a lot of dogs that bite. You know, there's a lot of fear biters out there. You know, right? And so we test the dog extensively before we accept them for training. And one of the things that we look at is temperament. And we will not, because it's not our sole vocation, we have the ability to be very, 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 very careful and choosy about the dogs that we train. We turn more dogs away than we accept for training. Simply because we have temperament problems, courage problems, or drive problems. You know, you can come to me with $10,000, man, and a mean dog and say, train my dog, and I'll tell you no. I don't need your money. You know, because I know that if I train that dog and he's got a bad temperament, sooner or later, man, there's some kid going to get bit. And I don't want to be responsible for that. So I try to be a responsible dog trainer. Is anybody thinking about buying a dog for personal protection? Where are you? Are you? Do you know what kind of dog you want?
I don't know.
You know,
a shepherd probably.
A shepherd? Do you live in a rural environment or an urban environment?
Very urban.
Very urban. What you need to think about is the environment that, that this specific dog is going to live in, right? In choosing a breed of dog. Some dogs really, really need a lot of exercise. And Rottweilers, for instance. If a Rottweiler doesn't get to run and work and exercise, he's going to get fat and lazy. It's a breed thing. And God knows I've seen a thousand of them. You know, somebody says, oh, I got a Rottweiler. And so, geez, I really like him. And then you look at it, and it's just a tub of guts. You know what I mean? I say, that don't look like a Rottweiler to me. You know? So when you're thinking about buying a dog, look at your environment. You know, what dog will fit in a limited exercise environment? You know, and still do what you want them to do. You know, you need a low energy dog. You know, if you buy like an Australian Shepherd, right? Because the dog can't exercise and run and do all this stuff, what you're going to wind up with is a highly neurotic dog. Because it just can't get out and do its thing, so it's going to do its thing in your living room. You know what I mean? And pretty sure it goes to the ground.
What would you suggest?
Well, I would consider a pit bull, you know, for instance. That's a dirty word these days, you know, because of irresponsible breeding. Let me assure you that there's nothing wrong with pit bulls. They're very friendly. They're very good dogs. They're a little dog aggressive, you know, but they don't require a lot of exercise. And if you have a responsible breeder and not a puppy mill, somebody's just spitting puppies out in it for bucks, cash crop, you know. If you have a responsible breeder and get a good one, they're wonderful dogs. They're wonderful dogs. They don't need a whole lot of exercise, you know. It's real nice to take them out of the park, and that's fine, you know. Something like that, a smaller dog that's really a low kind of energy dog. Right? I wouldn't get a Doberman, right? Or I might consider a German Shepherd, but you know, if you're living in close quarters in an apartment or something, you know, it'd be kind of hard on the dog. You kind of have to watch out for hip dysplasia with a German Shepherd because the dog can't exercise properly, you know, so it has a tendency for his hips to go down, even if you got a good one, right? You know, so you get a smaller breed. There's a lot of smaller breeds that have low energy, that have the courage required to do what you want to do. Basically, it seems to me that what you want to do is you want to be able to go to Safeway and feel safe. You know what I mean? One of the things that really, really bothered me is that I'm 58 years old now, right? I never really thought I'd get this old. I didn't plan for it. You know what I mean? But, you know, I'm too old to fight anymore, man. You know, I mean, you know, that gets a couple of thugs, man, jump on me, you know, I run out of gas real quick, man, you know, right? I used to think I was pretty good, but, you know, I'm getting too old for that anymore, you know? I'm really upset about the fact, man, that women and older people in general have become the victims in this culture, you know? And we all know that the justice system is broke down. I mean, it's just absolutely busted. Call a cop. Why? You want to buy him a cup of coffee? You know, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? It's like you gotta handle it yourself, man. You know what I mean? You gotta handle yourself. And it really bothers me. I have for freedom, man. You know, I've worked and paid my taxes and done my thing. You know, and I don't want to be restricted. You know, I want to go where I want to go. I don't want to do what I want to do. And I don't want to be bothered. You know? I just want to be at peace with myself and with my God and with my fellow man. That's all I want, you know. I just want to live out the remainder of my life without a lot of nonsense going on. And that's hard to do these days. Any more questions?
Is it better to have a pure breed dog, or say, for instance, if you went to the Humane Society and you picked up a dog,
you
know, like
Bantam,
is it harder to train the dog?
The lady asked if you went to the Humane Society and got a dog, is it a harder job to train the dog? Yeah, generally speaking, just as a general point of view, no, it's not hard to train the dog, right? But it's like going to a used car lot, you know, and buying somebody else's problem.
What if it's a mixed breed?
Nothing wrong with mixed breeds. Nothing wrong with mixed. Some of the best dogs in the world are mixed breeds. You know, there's nothing wrong. The reason that most of us choose what we call purebreds, right, is that they have certain characteristics that we try to mold to our own use. With the mixed breed, you're not quite sure what you get. You know what I mean? What the characteristics are, what the gene pool really is. We depend heavily on a gene pool. You know, if the dog has aggressive genes, then we want to bring those out. You know, and if I don't know a dog's background, I don't know if it has aggressive genes or submissive genes or, you know, much about it. You know, I have to deal with, you know, I got what I see, and I'm not sure what I see, you know. But generally speaking, there's nothing wrong with mixed breed dogs. Yes and no. You know, I mean, one of the things. There could be several things going on, right? You know, it could be that the pup is hungry. Could be the pup is just curious. You know? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things going on there. You know? The pup that comes closest to you, you know, when you're looking at pups, right? Generally speaking, has a certain amount of courage because you're a stranger there, you know, right? And that's a plus. You know, a pup that sees you and runs to the backyard, you know what I mean, you certainly don't want it, right? But there's a lot of theories about choosing pups, right? And there's all kinds of puppy tests that you can give a puppy to try to pick a puppy. But I've been doing this for 35 years, and my experience tells me that for the most part, it's a crapshoot. You know, puppies change so dramatically from day to day, from week to week, that you can have what you consider a really aggressive pup this week, and next week, he's incredibly shy. You know, I mean, so what's really required there is when you get a pup is the imprint process. You know, if you know that the dog's genetic lineage is one of a working family of dogs, right, then what you try to do is you try to excite that in a dog, in a puppy. And that's called imprinting. Like, for instance, right, most people get a puppy and they're petting the puppy and they're playing with the puppy and the puppy bites them, right? You know what they do? No. What do you tell the dog? So that's not cool. No bite. Right? So then they bring the dog to you a year later and say, I want my dog to be trained as a protection dog. The dog won't bite. Why? Because it's been imprinted not to do that. So you can't do that. So when you're going to buy a protection dog, man, you need to buy it from somebody that understands about imprinting. How to take a dog and let him know that it's okay to bite, to encourage that. Dogs react to stress in two ways, puppies. And they learn this at a very early age. One is submission. You put stress on a puppy, and he's gonna run away, he's gonna go into avoidance, the stress stops, he's learned something. He's learned that if he becomes submissive, the stress goes away. All the dog is interested in doing is relieving the stress. Does not care how it does it. If you allow that to happen, if you allow a dog, a puppy, to relieve stress through avoidance, that dog will always do that for the rest of its life. Anytime you put stress on a dog, the dog will go into avoidance. If you take a dog and put stress on a puppy and put stress on it, and it goes into avoidance, and you continue to add the stress, the dog will turn around immediately, even as a puppy, will see that whatever it's doing ain't working. And will turn around and go, just a little bit. At that point, you run away. You relieve the stress. The dog has learned an incredible thing, that it can relieve stress through aggression. And then you work on that. You build that.
That's called imprinting. Does that help you at all?
What is the best age to start painting? Is there any time that's too late?
About 20 minutes after they come out of the oven.
What temperature?
She said it's starting to cool off. We work with our dogs, right? As they come out of the oven, we're right there. And we begin the first phase of imprinting that it recognizes my smell. Now, when a puppy's born, it can't see, it doesn't hear very well, right? But its nose is working overtime, you know? And so what we try to do is we try to intermingle human scent with the mother's scent so that the dog can relate to us, feel safe with us, with people. If you let a bitch have puppies and don't go near the puppies until they're 8 weeks and you finally show up and want to handle one of the puppies are just going nuts, you know, I mean, you're scared, right? But if you imprint that, if you imprint their very first experiences with your smell and calmness, and you just kind of hold them and touch them and just be real, real, real gentle and nurturing with them, then they'll intermingle and be able to be social right away, you know? There's no such thing as teaching an old dog new tricks, man. That's an old wives' tale. You know, you can habituate a dog. I don't know if I pronounced that right. But you can get a dog that's 10 years old to change his whole pattern of life by putting him in your environment. The dog will adapt to your environment. You know, you might not be able to get him to climb a tree or bite somebody or something, but he will adapt to your environment, no matter how old he is. Which means that, you know, you can't get a dog from the town, and he will be adaptable to your environment, but he might not work, you know, but he'll... Dogs operate from pack law. Their survival depends on a pack. A dog is not an individual entity. It's not a solo entity. It's not like a wolf. A dog needs other dogs, and it's pack-oriented. And for his own survival, a dog has to adapt to the demands of the pack, whatever they are. And that's why a dog will go to any length to please you. It's not necessarily want to please you, right? But it wants to please the alpha dog in the pack, and hopefully that's you. You know? Do you understand what I'm saying? Dogs are incapable of love. They don't have that ability. What really happens is, I know people just go nuts when they do, oh, my poops loves me. That's your interpretation of it. I'm glad you're happy with it, but that's not really what's going on. You know, a dog will come up and lick you in the face. How many people have been licked in the face by a dog? You think that's affection? The dog is trying to get you to throw up so it can eat. That's exactly what it's doing. You watch the wolf pack. Watch the wolf pack. Turn in and dance with your dragon sometime, man. Watch the wolf pack, right? Here comes the mother man back from a hunting trip, right? And then she comes into the tent, all the puppies come out, and they all greet her, and they're going like that, and they're licking her in the face. And that's, the dog learns immediately, instinctually, that when you lick another dog in the face, man, you stimulate regurgitation. And the dog shows up, and the puppies get lunch, you know. So that's what's going on. That dog don't love you, you know. You don't even taste good. It's probably hungry. What we like to do with protected dogs is most people. It's been our experience that most people have never been around a protection dog at all. You know, the closest they've been around a protected dog is some monster in a movie, man, that's got six Dobermans that devour a guy and tear him in shreds, and they think, oh my God, you know, I mean, I don't think I want one. Or they walk past a police car one day, and the German Shepherd just goes bananas, man. You know what I mean? It just scares the hell out of everybody, man. And they think, oh God, that's a protection dog. That's not a protection dog, man. That's a police canine. You know, and what you see in the movies about dogs, man, is generally nonsense. You know, thank you, Walt Disney, but it's mostly nonsense, man. It's got no basis in fact at all. Right? So what we like to do is we like to familiarize people with a real, honest to God protection dog. And this one here is probably the best protection dog in the state of Arizona, man. His temperament is fine. Little children come up and stick their fingers up his nose, you know, and bite his ears, man, crawl over him, man, you know what I mean? You can come up and approach me and talk to me and then interact with me on any level. You can come over to my house anytime, you know, and this is what you got, right? You got the same temperament as a cocker spaniel. You know what I mean? Just lay there, just, you know, everything's cool. This dog is super aware, okay? If somebody from the audience approached me in an aggressive manner, this dog would immediately alert. Immediately. If somebody's in my home, if I invite a sewing machine salesman into my house, right, and he's sitting on my couch, and all of a sudden he turns out to be a burglar and a rapist or something, you know, bites you, right? But he'll immediately come right into you and just bark real aggressively, and then I take charge as the handler, and I say, don't move or your dog will bite you. And if you do move, guess what? You're going to get bit, you know? And what I'll do is I'll make you raise your hands, and I'll search you in case you got a gun or a knife or a bomb or something, you know? Right? I'll search you, and I'll tell you, stand still. I'm going to go call the police. And if you move while I'm gone, this dog's going to take you down. And if I ain't here to call him out, you're in a lot of trouble. You're in a lot of trouble. We get. You don't really need the police coming, man. You need a meat wagon at that point. You know what I mean? God forbid that you should ever have to put a dog on somebody. Dogs are good, man. It's like sticking your hand in the meat grinder, man. My dogs are guaranteed, absolutely guaranteed, to deliver 100 stitches a minute. That's what I call rehabilitation. You know? We all know the justice system is broken down. You don't need the justice system to win these dogs, man. You will absolutely, I guarantee you, rehabilitate somebody, whoever intrudes in your home, or tries to intrude in your personal life. You'd absolutely be rehabilitated. You don't need to spend $100,000 to keep him in prison for 20 years. You know, that's ridiculous, right? He will never, ever, ever do that again. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. These dogs are trained. My dog has, I'm just going to throw some numbers at you. These are not accurate numbers, you know. But let's just say that the dog delivers 1,000 pounds of pressure per square inch. Naturally, right? What we do is we build on that. We have a toy that's called a con, which is a hard rubber ball that the dogs. You ever see them weightlifters squeezing those little hard rubber balls? Well, he's got one in his mouth, man, and that's what he does, and he does that for years. So when my dog bites you, the first thing that's going to happen is you're going to have a broken arm. If he bites you on the arm, he's going to bite you on the forearm, and he's going to snap the bones, sever the muscles, and the only thing that's going to happen to you to keep your arm in place is the tendons, the two tendons going up and down your arm, right? And he's probably going to try to pull them out of your shoulder. So I don't know what you started to do, right? Where your head was at when you started. But I can guarantee you, man, it ain't gonna be in the same place when you're finished. You know? And that's the kind of damage. That's the kind of damage, man, that these dogs do. These are not toys. They double as a pet, as a companion. But they are not toys. They are tools. Different word. You know? And they're used for specific purposes. This dog doubles as a pet. He's about a half-assed friend of mine. You know? But he's more interested in working than he is anything. You know what I mean? And that's the way it is. A lot like a gun, man. A lot like a gun. What we'd like to do is we'd like to present this owning a protection dog, right, to the victims of the world who are women. And for that, I'd like to turn this microphone over to my wife and let you know what a protection dog has done for her in her life. Susie?
Hi, everybody. I've never done this before, so bear with me. I was watching Oprah Winfrey the other day, and somebody was saying she came from a dysfunctional family, and Oprah said, doesn't everybody? And I came from one of those families, like most of us, and I was taking up. Excuse me. And so I was kind of raised as a professional victim. And anytime I perceived anything as violence, I would just freeze. So when I fell in love with this old cowboy about 6 years ago, he said, we're going to buy a protection dog. And we went and bought Hulk when he was 2 years old. And he looked at me with this really loving look in his eye, and he said, this dog is going to save your life. And what I thought he meant was that we had some land that we had bought to start a recovery center down on the border of Mexico and Arizona. And there was some cocaine traffic going through there, and I thought that's what he meant. And that was true. A couple of times people would drive up on our property very close and look very suspicious, and they'd just see the dog and they would drive off. So I think a lot of violence is alleviated just by having the presence of a large dog like this that's obviously trained. But what really happened, for a personal experience for me about this dog changing my life, is that I had to learn how to handle this dog, and this is a lot of dog. And this is the first dog that I obedience trained and handled as Pete agitated for the dog. The first time that I was holding a dog and he bit the agitator and I had to give the commands, I got so scared that my throat just shut. And they were yelling, the command to release from the perpetrator is out. And I was trying to say out and nothing would come out of my throat. So that's where I was coming from when I started this. And they were all looking at me like, do something. And I said, out, and nothing happened. And so we went home that day, and it's summer, and all the windows in the house were open where we were living. And Keith said, we're going to learn how to take charge and how you can learn how to speak like an Army sergeant. And he said, I want you to count to 10 like you're in the militia. And I said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And he made me stand there until finally that little kid, like a lot of us have experienced as kids, I just closed the closet door and said, I don't want to play, thank you very much. And finally out it came where I could say, 1, 2, 3. And I couldn't believe it. It was like a release for me of understanding there was a person inside of me that really was not a victim. After learning how to handle these dogs, we were living in Tucson for a while, and there would be gangs in the shopping centers hanging out, and I'd walk by them before, and I would just shrivel. And, of course, they'd sense the victim in me, and they would whistle and make uncouth comments and feel like I was getting undressed with their eyes. And it was just, and I just hated it. And after training these dogs, when I walk in front of a group of men like that now, I just give them a look like, don't you even think about messing with me. And they don't. They look at me like, woo. They can just tell. So this has been a transforming experience for me, not only feeling safe because I can go anywhere with these dogs, but because it transformed me as a woman. It really changed my life. I trained Casey from the very beginning. We bought her at 8 weeks, and this is the first dog that I obedience trained. The advantage of having a female dog for me, and maybe some of you women will relate, is that she just doesn't have the bulk. She weighs about 80 pounds, hulks about 120. It's a lot easier to handle. For me to handle Hulk, I can do it, but I have to really work at it. And because he's just, he's what is called an alpha dog. An alpha dog is a dog that, if he was at the head of a pack of dogs pulling a sled, he would kill the other dogs to get to the top, to the front of the line. That's just, they come out of the oven like that. That's just an alpha dog. There's alpha personalities, the same way we all know. So, it's very important. It was important for me, and it's important with the people, especially the women that we work with, that I can demonstrate to the dogs that a woman can handle these dogs because it's really fun. And also to match the right dog, sometimes a female dog, is my point, is really an excellent dog for a woman just because she has less mass. There's no question in my mind that Casey would defend me as well as this big dog. The UPS drivers in our driveway are more concerned about this one because she just loves to work because genetically that's what she's bred for centuries to do. And so is she. But Casey's just real serious about it. You'll get to see how that works. Female dogs are more sensitive, just like female women, emotional. We are more emotional than men. And when you go to train a female dog, it's touchy business. You've got to have a professional trainer that really knows what they're doing, because if you overcorrect a female, they'll just foals and they won't come back. With a male dog, you can put more pressure on. That's why most hard dogs are used for canines as are males for that reason. They're just easier to train and they're harder. So after we train a pup, and first we work with obedience so that there's safety and control. My concern was I just didn't want to have a mean dog on the property. These dogs will not bite unless they're told, with one exception. With females, men also, but especially females, if someone jumps out of a bush at me when I'm walking the dogs, most likely, even with all the training that I have, it's a physiological reaction to the fear, is my body will be flooded with adrenaline, and I may or may not be able to give a command. That's why most rapes happen with women, because they just freeze, can't even yell, can't even think, because it's a biological flooding of adrenaline. So at the end of training, after all the control is put in, the obedience and taught to bite, and out, which is to release, then we do scenario training. So we can train a dog specifically for the family. So if you want the dog boundary trained, so no one can come in your yard, we can do that. There's a thing called guardian training. If there's a small child that might be at risk from some perpetrator, we can train a dog to stay between the perpetrator and the child at whatever radius you so choose. So you choose 50, 20 feet, the dog will protect the child, and if the perpetrator comes over that line, the dog will automatically bite. We can car train a dog. We don't do that with ours because we never underestimate the human power of human stupidity. People have stuck their babies right in front of Hulk's face and said, look at this beautiful dog. And so we have not car trained our dogs because the risk of people's stupidity scares us so much. By that I mean if someone tried to break into our car, they would bite. So we have not trained them to do that. We do scenario training such as out in the field, wherever you would be, or your workplace, or your house. After we're finished with training a dog, we'll come to your house, rattle the doors, and run away, telling you ahead of time, obviously, that we're coming, if you want the dog trained for that. So it's exciting to specifically train a dog for your family's specific needs. The main difference that's important to me between these dogs and a canine cop dog is the control. I want this dog to go into a kindergarten classroom with me and be able to lick every child's face and be absolutely sure that even if the kid moves fast, nothing's going to happen. And I've done that with Casey. Up here we have a fall festival and we demonstrate the dogs. And first thing we do is walk right along the edge of the people, and all the little kids get their faces washed and everybody pets the dogs. Then we walk out into the middle of the field, and it's absolutely astounding because then they turn into a man's stopper. So it's really exciting. One thing that Pete started to touch on that I think is really fun and interesting to talk about, just briefly, is about choosing a puppy. As Pete was saying, this is just a general feel. In about 8 weeks, you can take and you can sit in the middle of a litter of pups, and you can do several things. You can drop or bang a pot together and make a loud, sharp noise. Some puppies will flee, and some will just kind of look at you like, what was that? That was kind of a different sound. That's to test for courage. Sociability, like you mentioned, to see if a dog actually will come up. There's what's called a pinch test. You can pinch the dog on the flank till he yelps and see if he's forgiving, because if you can't train a dog, if he can't be corrected. If you want a dog for protection and gunfire, pups can be tested even when they're that small under gunfire. And this is just fascinating to me, because genetically, if one dog in the pup in the whole litter is gun shy, the other ones might be too. So you never want to take a pup for protection if you think it might ever be in a situation with gunfire, which it certainly could be if you're using it these days. Let's see what else. Oh, and prey drive is really important. The way we train our dogs is all in prey drive, which is chase a rabbit, or if you take a towel for a little pup and wiggle it on the floor low so it doesn't hurt their necks. The puppies have to be able to chase that, or you can't train them, because we train our dogs totally in prey drive. They think this is fun. The perpetrator doesn't know that, but they think this is the biggest game. When we go outside, you'll hear Holt start to cry when he sees the slaves come out, because this is his most favorite thing in the whole world to do. He just loves to work. And so in choosing a puppy, that might be helpful. If you take him for a walk out in the field and the dog walks ahead and comes back and checks on you, that means he's probably very human-oriented. That's an excellent sign. If you want a double dog as a retriever, say a lab that would be a protection dog and a retriever, you can throw a ball and see if they bring it back. Most labs will do that. What am I forgetting? Anything for puppy training? Puppy? It's a fascinating business, and each puppy is as individual as your kids. They're all a little different. If you take a dog that has been bred for centuries, like Rottweilers were used in the Roman times as war dogs, and if you have a dog like that and don't have a take charge personality where you can be the alpha person in that pack, the dogs will walk right over you, and you have an unsafe dog. So choosing a dog is just absolutely critical to get the right dog for the right people. Anything else you want to talk about?
Over.
You want to take over?
Yeah. So is there any, what Susie touched on, is there any questions?
No questions.
Oh, okay, one.
I just want to tell you guys, from the standpoint of being an attorney and working in an urban environment, a lot of cases we have involve dogs that are not trained.
Absolutely.
And if you're in an urban setting and a dog bites, most state laws, strict liability insurance, you can lose your house. So you have to be careful. If it gets trained properly, though, if you're the trespasser, it's an absolute offense. But if a dog, if somebody just walks by, the dog piles out the front door, piles up in the front of the driveway, you're in big trouble. That's if the dog has a serious physical injury. So a dog is like a weapon. And I've seen not trained properly, it can be a real dangerous thing. It's like a loaded pistol sitting on a counter in your family.
Or worse, the dog doing this. The Supreme Court of the United States has declared in a ruling that the use of a trained protection dog is an alternative to deadly force. The same rules apply to using a dog, deploying a dog, as deploying a pistol. If somebody comes up and tweaks your nose and turns around and runs away, you legally cannot send a dog after him. You can be sued, right? A dog is used as a deterrent. That's the theory of it. Once the aggression is deterred, the dog has to be called back. You can't. You cannot chase a perpetrator with a dog legally. Legally.
You know, just call a cop.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. If I walk up to you and slap you upside the head and took your wallet, right, and caught you off guard, and you had a dog, and I was running away, right, and you sent your dog after me, right, when the cops got there, right, you'd be working for me. I would be in jail. This is really true. I would be in jail for stealing your money, right, and I would have a judgment, like $1 million judgment against you, right? I'd be getting rich in jail.
But there's another side to that, folks. I can tell you from experience that with these dogs, you're not going to tweak my nose. And I don't have to give the dog the command. If he sees you go like that toward my face or Annie's face or one of our children's face, Crusher's going to eat you. And Hulk would too. So it's not a question of sending the dog after the guy when he's running away.
He's never going to get that far.
He's not going to get that far.
Yeah. Most peace officers, you know, are pretty reasonable. You know, they understand that you're working for a broke system. You know, they understand that. I mean, they see that every day. You know, right? And if a couple of thugs confront you and your dog dissuades them, you know, right? Then you know they just say, yeah, okay. You know, right? That's cool, right?
You were saying that Rottweilers need a lot of exercise. What about the German Shepherd? How much exercise?
Well, they need to run a lot. You know, I mean, a lot, right? You cannot have a German Shepherd, lock him up in an apartment and let him exist. What's going to happen is you're going to create hip problems, you know, skeletal problems, muscle problems. You know, the dog needs exercise. You got to exercise the dog, right? A lot of people buy dogs for protection and then just kind of shine them up. You know, the dog's in the house, they feed it, they pat its head, and turn on the TV. You know, one of the things, man, that I've noticed through the years is that as a people, as Americans, man, we get some really strange attitudes about dogs, right? We have a tendency to treat our dogs like children, and we have a tendency to treat our children like dogs. You know, somewhere along the line, man, we got all screwed up there, you know? And, you know, a dog has to be exercised properly. You know, it's the same way with a kid. You would take a kid, lock him up in an apartment, and keep him there. You know what I mean? You got to really run him out. You know, really run him. You know, and really exercise him. It's a lot of responsibility. It's a pain in the butt, man, to come home at night and work with your dog. You know, geez, I worked all day in the machine shop, and you know, I come home and my old lady's cranky, man. My kids ain't doing well in school, man. I gotta work this damn dog, man. You know, I don't want to do it. You know, and that's the way it is. Yes. Probably agree with her. A dog generally puts a real damper on domestic violence in the house. You know. I mean, if you're prone to kick your old lady in the butt, man, don't get one of these dogs. Yeah. She's not a good idea. You know. Right. I had a guy come into my house one time. You know, we work with alcoholics a lot, and addicts, and we have a specialty in that field. Is that we like to work with acute crime alcoholics and addicts, and that are people that just can't seem to get it no matter what, you know. And some of these guys think they're really tough, you know. And especially guys living down the street for several years, you know, and they might have been in prison, and somebody one time or another, man, told me you're a tough guy, and they believed it, and, you know, been acting that way ever since, you know. And we had a guy in our house one time that we were working with, man, and decided to get tough, you know. And you ought to see him as his doctor. I hit the guy, you know, because he got a little rude. I hit him, and he fell back into the overturned chair, and my dog just got up on the chair and just looked over at him and went, you know. One of the things the guy found out, I mean, I don't think he found out much about staying sober, but he found out he wasn't tough, you know what I mean? I don't know if that was helpful to him or not, you know. What we'd like to do is we'd like to go outside. Does anybody have any more questions?
Yeah, that was a near-death experience.
Who? Oh.
Susie was saying, you have a dog, that's your hand, and you go back to check on you. But, and so, what I'm wondering about is a dog for protection, but will also be related to take care of me.
Yes, there are dogs like that. What are they called? They're called handy dogs. There's several organizations that deal exclusively in those dogs that will answer the phone, open the door, get your stuff out of the refrigerator, just do amazing stuff. Just absolutely amazing stuff, you know, to serve whatever needs that you might have, you know. And at the same time, be protective. At the same time, dual purpose. It's a lot like having a protection dog that sniffs drugs. You know, they're dual purpose dogs. It's probably a really exceptional dog that will do that. But yeah, that is available. That's certainly available.
How many carloads of dogs would you buy a week?
Well, a lot. I had a call up to dog food company, man, tell me you're breaking my back, man. And they sent me some certificates, man, for discounts, man. Yes.
Is a good idea?
No. It's more of a rural tune than it is anything. You know, mostly it's for people who aesthetically don't want a fence, number one, or two, financially can't afford a fence. You know, it works really well in an urban setting. It's not real good. It's not real good. I mean, it works real good in the rural sense. It's not real good in the city at all. It ain't. It just, you know, don't work.
The fence won't hold my dog, as you've all discovered.
You know, these dogs, man, got such high drive that in a city where they're getting stressed a lot by a lot of people being around, you know, they'll go right through that barrier. That's not a really strong deterrent for a dog. I don't think. I bought one and gave it away. You know, I mean, I don't like it. Huh?
I want a dog that's real friendly, but if somebody just tries to, it would count.
Why don't you do me a favor? Why don't you come over here? Come on down here.
All right.
And that's it for today, folks. We'll continue with this same program tomorrow. And you'll hear the end of the lecture portion. And then you'll hear the outside demonstration, the actual demonstration of the use of the dogs. And that was incredible. You won't be able to see it on the radio, but you'll be able to hear enough to amaze you, I think. And I may even describe what's happening for you in the portions where you need to see but can't. If you need to contact Peter or Susie Sherlaw about obtaining a dog, and folks, they just retired from that business, so they're not selling dogs. I don't know if you can entice them to train your dog, but they can give you advice. Their number is 520-521-5886. That's 520-521-5886. That's Peter and Susie Sherlaw, spelled Sherlaw. They're great people. They trained our dog, and our dog gives us the greatest sense of security that we have ever known. And as you all know, we've received some pretty terrible threats because of what I do. And this is the first time in my life that I've been able to go to bed without taking my 45 automatic with me. We are just, you know, we have no fear while that dog is here. But if you were to visit, I guarantee you might, under the wrong circumstances. So, that's it for tonight. Good night, folks. God bless each and every one of you. And remember, the Hour of the Time is rebroadcast every night at 8 Pacific, 11 Eastern.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a nonprofit community service.
This is the Voice of Freedom. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Folks, if you'd like to help the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network continue to expand its programming and also help yourself protect your assets against any kind of an economic emergency, call Southwest International Trade.